Stay tuned for one of the most unusual and fascinating hours you'll ever hear. The subject is UFOs. Welcome to the Paranet UFO Continuum, a one-hour program dedicated to a very strange phenomena, unidentified flying objects. Whether or not you believe UFOs exist, the controversy is real, and this program will try to get to the bottom of it. Your host is Michael Corbin, Director of Paranet Information Services, a global communications network based near Denver, Colorado, dedicated to the investigation of UFOs. We invite you to keep an open mind as we discuss one of the most fascinating and strange subjects in the world. Here's your host, Michael Corbin.
It has been referred to as the Puzzle Palace. It is alleged to be one of the most super-secret intelligence organizations in the world. It was not even officially recognized until only recently, although it has been in existence since 1947, September to be a little more exact. This obscure agency outranks the Central Intelligence Agency. It is known as the NSA, or the National Security Agency. Now, you wonder what the NSA has to do with UFOs? Well, my guest tonight is going to discuss this connection. We're going to take you back into the history of UFOs, and we're going to see where the NSA connection comes in, and it's going to surprise you because it goes all the way back to 1952 when the Robertson panel convened to discuss the situation, which was at that time quite out of hand. The capital of the United States was overrun by UFO sightings in July of 1952, and it just spurned a huge amount of concern by the public, and of course the military was trying to put it down and get rid of it. And most people don't realize this, but the Robertson panel was staffed by several scientists, actually seven of them. One of them is unnamed to this day. We still don't know who it is. And of course the actual proceedings of the Robertson panel were not even released. Excerpts were released recently, and still large parts of it are still classified. But what is going to surprise you is that a connection was found between Dr. H.P. Robertson, who was the chair of that panel, and it was discovered that Robertson not only was a scientist, but he had an intelligence background. Now, this has stirred up a lot of discussion over the years in the UFO research community as to who has been running the UFO show. You know, we've been told that Project Blue Book was the official Air Force investigation, but there has been evidence that's come out over the years that indicate that the intelligence community has been running the show. So we're going to get into that tonight with the NSA. Before we move to that, we want to talk a little bit about sightings. Denver has had a sighting report. It's quite a remarkable one, and it involves a black triangular-shaped object, very large, as a matter of fact. The witness has reported that it was the size of three houses that went over her house, very low and making a lot of rumbling sound. What's interesting about this report is that we have located 13 witnesses that were 3 miles away from this location who heard the sound. At the present time, MICAP, the sister organization of Paranet, the Multinational Investigations Cooperative on Aerial Phenomena, is investigating this case, and it is still ongoing. We have not formed any conclusions yet, but I want to put out a message to anyone in the Denver area that hears this broadcast. If you have anything you want to talk about reporting or heard anything 2 weeks ago, Monday night, October the 24th, we'd like to hear from you. You can contact us at 303-429-2654. That's 303-429-2654. And don't let me just talking about Denver stop the rest of you. If you have any sighting reports you'd like to talk about, we'd like to hear them. And you can reach us at that same number, 303-429-2654, to discuss it. Also, one other local piece of news for the Denver area, the Multinational Investigations Cooperative on Aerial Phenomena will be holding its monthly meeting this coming Thursday, November the 10th, 1994, at the Colorado Cafe at 58th and Broadway at 7:30 p.m. There's a $3 cover charge at the door. You might want to plan on attending that if you're in the Denver area. It's quite an interesting meeting. Okay, and 1-800-836-2009 is our number. 1-800-836-2009. Be sure and give us a call tonight early, because a lot of you wait till the last minute to give us a call, and we can't get your calls in, so please do call early. My guest tonight is a researcher and UFO investigator who has been at this for a number of years. He's a veteran, and he's very credible. He's stayed mostly on the path of trying to document the UFO phenomena and how the government has been handling it. At some point, he has been involved with the MJ-12 investigation. A lot of you may or may not know what MJ-12 is, but several years ago, a researcher named Bill Moore introduced the MJ-12 documents, which alleged that there were 12 members that were impaneled by the government to run the UFO project, and they go all the way back to the Roswell incident. There's been a lot of controversy over the veracity of those documents, and I personally feel that the documents are probably frauds or hoaxes, but there's a lot more to it than just saying simply that it was a hoax. There's a lot of indication that whoever hoaxed those did have a very intimate knowledge of the government's involvement in UFOs back in the 40s and the 50s. But my guest has been involved in bringing forth another document called the Aquarius document, and we'll probably touch upon that tonight. His name is Dale Gowdy. Good evening, Dale. Are you there?
Yes.
Hi. Thank you for being on the program with us.
Mm-hmm.
Help me fill in the background. How many years back do you go in this field?
I go back to about 1973.
How'd you get involved in it?
I got involved because I watched a television show back in those days. Dick Cavett did a show with Dr. J. Allen Hynek, Carl Sagan's, and I think Captain Coyne of a medevac helicopter incident then, and a few other people. I found the show to be very interesting. I found to be that some of those people on the show were very convincing, and I'd like to know more about it. So I was lucky enough to talk to a few people early in the game, Major Donald Kehoe and a few other people before they passed
away. So you go
back
with some of the veterans then, like Kehoe and Hynek and that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, but I did come in sort of on the tail. I was lucky enough to get to know them for the time I did before they did leave.
Dale, what's your professional background?
Well, I was in the Army in Vietnam back at a very early age, 62, and my job over there was teaching squad tactics to Vietnamese. Later on, I went over there in a different capacity. I sort of jack of all trades. I did a lot of many things. You know, I produced television talk shows in San Francisco for a while. Then later I switched from producing television shows to doing commercials. I found that I wasn't pulling my hair out trying to make the show each week. And then later on I got into different aspects of flying and things like this.
You are a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, when we come back from our break, we're going to get into this NSA UFO connection and hear about the research that you've done. 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-UFO-2009. Give us a call. My guest is Dale Gowdy, and he's going to talk about the National Security Agency's involvement in the UFO business. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum. We'll be right back.
The Paranet UFO Continuum is pleased to offer a number of exciting products. Cassette tapes of previous shows are available for $8 each, or 2 for $12, or 4 for $20. You can also order Paranet memberships and subscriptions to Continuum, Paranet's quarterly newsletter. Paranet, along with MICAP, the Multinational Investigations Cooperative on Aerial Phenomena, is pleased to offer a stunning black T-shirt with a background of galaxies, stars, and comets, and the Paranet and MICAP logos, along with the beautiful blue-green planet Earth. When you order from Paranet, you're helping to keep this program on the air. Call now to place an order or to get more information at 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-UFO-6381. Paranet, your window on the universe, at 1-800-UFO-6381.
Grab a pen and get ready to copy down a computer address. It's an email address where you can reach the Paranet Information Services BBS through America Online. With America Online's Internet Gateway, you can send us mail and we can respond to you personally through your America Online screen name. With America Online's Usenet newsgroup tie-in, you can also access the 7 Paranet newsgroups dealing with UFOs, metaphysics, paranormal activity, and others. Learn about our upcoming shows and pose questions in advance. And if your question is selected, you'll get a free cassette copy of the show. You'll also find summaries of past shows. If you're not already a customer of America Online, call 1-800-827-6364 for more information. Now, here's that email address to reach us. It's paranet@aol.com or paranet@paranet.org. America Online and Paranet, a winning combination.
UFOs for real, or are they just fiction? To find out, stay with us for more of the Paranet UFO Continuum with your host, Michael Corbin.
And my guest is Dale Gowdy. Dale is a researcher, has been around for quite a few years and researched the UFO phenomena. And before we get into this interview, let's talk about the historical aspect of it. Now, all of us know that 1947, July to be exact, there was an alleged crash of a UFO in the deserts of New Mexico. Now, if this is true, and it seems like a lot of the evidence that's pointing to it is true, that something did crash there, it would, of course, be a significant military event, not to mention if it does turn out that there was something extraterrestrial about it or not of this world, it would be a tremendous event for mankind, actually. But in setting up the idea of who has been involved in running the show here, as we all know, the first agency to get involved was the Air Force, and they set up Project Sign, and Project Sign ran, I believe, for 1 year, and then Project Grudge took its place. And as this evolution took place in the military, researching the UFO phenomena, there were three belief camps, and according to Dale's article in UFO Magazine, there were three belief camps that were prevalent. One, they were interplanetary aircraft. Two, they were secret foreign weapons. And three, they were only natural phenomena or nonsense. Now, a lot of people who have been researching this stuff historically have found that quite a few people of prominence, including Major Donald Kehoe, who has written several books on the subject, was convinced that this Earth was being visited by interplanetary civilizations. Now, the Robertson panel, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dale, the Robertson panel turns out to be probably one of the pivotal events in the UFO history because of the fact that the panel convened in 1953 to address this problem of the concern of the public demanding to know what UFOs were or what they are. And the military was scared to death of the subject, and because of the public interest in it, they were forced into convening this panel. Now, this panel did set policy, and we've talked about that on this program in the past. The policy that was set, among other things, was that the subject of UFOs had to be debunked, and that was one of the actual words that were used in the briefing paper. Mm-hmm. Now, Dale, jump in here with this thing with the NSA. Now, I myself have seen the Ruppelt papers.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Ruppelt was the first founder, or not founder, but he was the first leader of Project Blue Book. And we did see his papers after he passed away. We were able to examine those papers. And He indicated that the Robertson panel was a kind of a spooky thing anyway, and I think he even mentions it in his book because of the fact that he mentioned that there was an agency, one person represented an agency that was so secret that if he even mentioned the name of the agency, nobody would recognize it. Was he talking about the CIA, which some people think, or was he talking about the NSA?
No, you know, for a long time, people thought when he mentioned in his book, he got a, for instance, he got a call, somebody was slapping his hand because he was too pro-UFO, or flying disc at that time. He was too pro-flying disc, and he got a call, which was pretty nasty. He states in his book, from the Puzzle Palace. Well, most people thought the Puzzle Palace was the Pentagon. Well, basically, they were right. The NSA did start at the Pentagon first.
Now, the NSA started in what, 1947?
Yeah, but they, you know, the NSA wasn't signed into effect until, you know, the end of 52.
Oh, okay.
After the sightings over the Capitol. This is what's very interesting about it, because you have the sightings in 52 over the Capitol. And they weren't the same night, but two different nights. And the interesting thing is shortly after that, the NSA was signed without the approval of the Congress, without the approval of the Senate. It was signed by President Truman.
Now, is there a possibility that the NSA, this might be stretching it a bit, but is there a possibility that the NSA was formed to deal with the UFO problem itself, or was there other reasons for its formation?
Basically, that's a good question. I think it was formed for a lot of things, you know, electronic surveillance of any kind. And we have written to the NSA on many, many requests asking them about electronic surveillance of any nature. I mean, you had some talk about, I mean, if you get into the RB-47 cases, they were picking up things on 3,000 or 300 megahertz or something like that. And so, I mean, if the RB-47s, which is, were picking up this type of something that seemed to be intelligent, I'm sure that the NSA would be just as involved in that as they were.
What's the RB-47?
The RB-47 was a plane, electronical surveillance plane with electronic equipment to pick up all kind of stuff, you know, anything unusual, communications, what have you, et cetera. I'm not an expert on the RBs.
Mm-hmm.
I do find it interesting, though, and we are getting more involved in that. We have asked the NSA, you know, about that. We will probably put out some information on that shortly. However, getting back to the Robertson panel and stuff, to your listeners, you know, the Robertson panel was put together by the CIA. And basically, there were guidelines, and, you know, you spoke of one of the guidelines, you know, to placate a concerned, you know, public. If you go through the Robertson report, you get to the point where they were more concerned about people messing up, you know, the telephone lines or panic than they were about the subject themselves, and their job was to give us an evaluation on UFOs, and that evaluation really didn't teeter out of their out of that Robertson panel. And of course, the interesting thing where you have the NSA connection after the Robertson made their evaluation, and the key letter, the glass key, which people should argue with because we do have the documents, is the term national security, national defense. That's the term that the government made. That's the term we have to challenge.
Why is that?
Because you're not going to tackle the government on aliens from outer space. You're not going to tackle them, you know, where do they come from. You have to tackle them as why they made that determination, no threat to national security, when basically the documents we have today are in complete reverse of that. Because, I mean, for instance, if you look at the 1975 documents of, you know, UFOs over missile silos K1, K3, you know, picked up on radar, visually seeing jets, interceptors, you know, coming in to go after them. You have, you know, if that isn't a national security problem, I don't know what is. They can't catch them with our fastest jets. You have them landing at some air bases. When security comes there, you have them taking off in a vertical ascent, and not only one night but two nights, the object repeats its course. We were told, you know, that they were helicopters. When we look into it, we find out that they're, that, you know, nobody said helicopters. It was just presumed by the press that they were helicopters. Again, faster jets sent out to pursue them can't catch them. It seems to be a very interesting thing of the whatever these objects are interested in military facilities. If you go back into the press release that we did on that, on the NSA, and the you find that it was so sensitive that it went right up to the NSC, which
okay.
the president sits on, National Security Council.
I'm curious real quick. Do you know, are you familiar with the NRO, the National Reconnaissance Organization?
Yeah. They're the only ones that actually charged us quite a bit of money for asking them for information.
Are they connected in any way to the NSA?
I don't know, but I would imagine being that they're in satellites, electronic satellites and spy satellites and all that, I suppose that they would have to be connected with the NSA.
Okay. We're going to go to break. 1-800-836-2009. 1-800-UFO-2009. When we come back, we're going to talk about the intelligence community and what is it possibly thinking about as far as being involved in this. What are the implications of that? My guest is Dale Gowdy. We'll be right back after this message. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum.
Paranet Information Services is your electronic window on the world of UFOs, accessible by computer and modem. Paranet keeps you up to date on the world pulse of ufology with sighting reports, interesting findings, and general discussion on the mysterious UFO enigma. Paranet features one of the most comprehensive text file libraries in the world on the paranormal, available for a small online fee. So plug into power and knowledge through Paranet. The BBS number is available 24 hours a day. Call the data line at area 303-429-2713. That's 303-429-2713. Or for more information, contact Paranet Information Services at area 303-429-2654. That's 303-429-2654.
An increase in immigration to the United States.
A report issued today states that newly arrived immigrants.
It seems like every day there's another news story about refugees or immigrants. But beyond the headlines, there are things about immigration that you as an employer need to know. People who are already in the United States, who already have a legal right to work in this country, are being discriminated against by employers who don't know the law. Did you know that in almost all cases it is illegal to require U.S. citizenship? And it is also illegal to demand to see specific documents, like a green card, or not accept other papers that can prove a right to work. Take time to learn the law. It's easy, and it can save your business from facing severe penalties. Call the Office of Special Counsel at 1-800-255-8155. 1-800-255-8155. And next time you do any hiring, look at the facts, not at the faces.
You're listening to one of the most unusual programs you'll ever hear. It's the Paranet UFO Continuum, and it deals with one of the most fascinating subjects around. Once again, here's your host, the director of Paranet Information Services, Michael Corbin.
And my guest is Dale Gowdy. Dale has been researching the UFO subject for several years. We're talking about the National Security Agency. Dale has uncovered some documents through the Freedom of Information Act. indicating that the National Security Agency was involved in the UFO business all the way back to 1953. And we're talking about that tonight. And Dale is going to tell us next about the documents that he received. Dale, give us an idea about the documents and what they told you.
Okay, it isn't, when we release this confirmation paper, which was a press release with these new documents we got from the CIA, this wasn't the first time we were on the NSA's back, because we did a press conference at the National Press Club in 1987 releasing information with senators involved in that and everything about a Project Aquarius. However, later on, we got these new documents that we felt that were very important. Apparently, they were released at one time before on a different matter, but nobody seemed to read through the lines.
Nobody caught
what it meant.
Yeah. Real quick, bring us up to date on the Aquarius documents. I know I mentioned that at the beginning of the program. What was the Aquarius documents?
With Aquarius, strangely again, the information of Aquarius came from a paper that Bill Moore had, a researcher that Bill Moore, by the way, to your listeners, is the one that brought up the MJ-12 documents. However, most of us know now that the MJ-12 thing was a hoax, and if they don't know, they're really in trouble. However, the only thing that I think Bill Moore has ever released what was very important was the Aquarius thing, but that document was even called bogus. But a fellow, Chris Lambright, got me interested in this, a researcher out of Texas. We both started working in that aspect, and the NSA released a thing saying that they did have a Project Aquarius, and that any mention of it could cause great damage to national security. However, they told Senator John Glenn that there were two Project Aquariuses. One that the Air Force had that possibly did deal with UFOs, but their Project Aquarius did not. It wasn't until 1992 that we finally got the Air Force to admit that they didn't have a Project Aquarius. And when we asked the NSA, why they told Senator John Glenn and Senator Domenici out of New Mexico, why did they tell them there were two Project Aquariuses when the Air Force said they didn't have any? They said to us, they looked in their file, and they looked in their database, and they have no mention of the Air Force ever having a Project Aquarius. So in return, what we did is we sent Senator Meachie and Senator John Glenn that information, our correspondence, showing them that they were hoodwinkled by those agencies, but no big deal. We didn't really say anything nasty about the agencies. We never do. And we just sent it to them for their own information, and they didn't have to answer us about it. But they probably got a tickle out of that also. So that was, that's where we are in Project Aquarius. What do I think Project Aquarius is? I really do believe, out of all the information that's been released over the years, that Project Aquarius probably is the most sensitive information on UFOs.
What does it say?
I think it's Project Aquarius is about electronic surveillance and in aircraft and other means, and a lot more information goes with it, and that's probably why it has the name of Aquarius. The new, this is the new dawning of Aquarius, and I believe that that's probably the name that was given to it because of that.
Uh-huh. I have to agree. Now, I remember something in one of Kehoe's books talking about one of the I can't remember which one it was. It might have been General Electric or someone being given a contract by the Air Force to determine if there was any type of communications going between, ship to ship and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I can see the validity of, the involvement of an intelligence gathering organization that's main purpose is for intercepting communications.
Mm-hmm.
But, the thing that really puzzles me, and I want to get your input on this, but, where do you see the vector, the congruence here of it becoming such a serious problem to the intelligence communities? Now, I'm not saying that I don't see a legitimate need for this, but I'm asking, where is the congruence here? Where do the intelligence communities enter? And if the government is telling us that there's really nothing going on, why does this seem to be such a high-level secret?
I think the word is still national security, national defense. I think we have to break down that fence
Do you think that's just a technical way? The same thing with the...
Yeah, I think, you know, Michael, if you get into, you know, I mean, this is just the way I believe, so hypothetical, yeah, but if you get into all of the issues that we could talk about with UFOs, we could be here talking about why we shouldn't reveal it to the public because of the clergy and everything, I mean, for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the way the military perceives it, I mean, if you put yourself in their seat and look at ourselves on the other side, and we're giving a reason why they shouldn't tell us, I think the biggest thing is national security, national defense. I really don't think that they have an answer, and I don't think that they feel that the American public would like the answer if they had to give them the truth anyway. And the truth would be if the phenomena became hostile, is there a defense against it? I believe they probably would say you the truth, no.
Are they playing roulette? I mean, are they?
I think they are. I think that they're playing a very dangerous game because I think more people should know the truth about this to evaluate it in a different sense. And they're not taking that opportunity to give other scientists and people around the globe the truth so we can see, you know, what other people have their feelings about this and maybe more information that we don't know about or maybe they don't even know about. So. I know that, you know, basically we're getting into a subject here because we don't know enough about the phenomena itself. We just know that somebody's keeping a secret, and that's the dangerous part of it because none of us really know.
Dale, what do you think happened in Roswell? I mean, do you think that the crash in July of 47 in the deserts out there, what do you think that represented?
Well, now this is hypothetical, mind you, but I imagine there was a, you know, since the Air Force came out at the Pentagon and said there was a Project Mogul and it was a balloon to detect Russian nuclear test. That probably was true. I don't believe they would lie about that. However, that wasn't the thing that crashed at Roswell. And luckily, I got to talk to Marcel before he died. So did Chris Lambright, a good friend of mine. Talked to him, and, you know, there's no doubt that he could tell the difference between weather balloons
mm-hmm.
and that. I really personally believe that stuff was... probably taken to Sandia and not where people think it was taken on an air flight.
Sandia being in New Mexico as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, right. And probably the best place because that's underground stuff there and a good place to hide things.
You think?
And nobody likes to, every time we get close to Kirkland Air Force Base in Sandia, everybody runs to run the other way and all kind of information comes out taking us to Area 51 and everything.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of disinformation or misinformation going on out there in the field. And I think that we're being fed a lot of pap and that kind of thing. But anyway, we're going to go to another break. 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-UFO-2009. My guest is Dale Gowdy. He is discussing with us the connection between UFOs and the National Security Agency. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Roswell and perhaps talk about what the intelligence communities are concerned about. Stay with us. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum.
The Paranet UFO Continuum is pleased to offer a number of exciting products. Cassette tapes of previous shows are available for $8 each, or 2 for $12, or 4 for $20. You can also order Paranet memberships and subscriptions to Continuum, Paranet's quarterly newsletter. Paranet, along with MICAP, the Multinational Investigations Cooperative on Aerial Phenomena, is pleased to offer a stunning black T-shirt with a background of galaxies, stars, and comets, and the Paranet and MICAP logos, along with the beautiful blue-green planet Earth. When you order from Paranet, you're helping to keep this program on the air. Call now to place an order or to get more information at 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-UFO-6381. Paranet, your window on the universe at 1-800-UFO-6381.
If one of us voted in this election, would anybody listen? If 1,000 of us voted in this election, would anybody listen? If 100,000 of us voted in this election, would anybody listen? If 1 million of us voted in this election. Would anybody listen? They would listen to the sound of a younger voice, to the sound of a younger man. They would listen.
Is brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is the Paranet UFO Continuum, a weekly program dedicated to the mysterious and fascinating world of UFOs. If you're interested in learning more about Paranet, the world's foremost communications network dealing with the UFO phenomena, call us at area 303-429-2654 or write to Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. Once again, here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And my guest is Dale Gowdy, and we're talking about the National Security Agency and its involvement with the UFO business. Give us a call, 1-800-836-2009. That's 1-800-UFO-2009. Now, Dale, let's talk a little bit about the stars of this show. I noticed in your article here, and by the way, ladies and gentlemen, the article I'm referring to appears in UFO Magazine, Volume 9, Number 1, and you can get this magazine at your local newsstand. I noticed in here a name that I have seen come across in some of the research that I've done, Walter Beadle Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Walter Smith, General Walter Beadle Smith,
mm-hmm.
was a primary mover in establishing such things as the Psychological Strategy Board.
Yeah.
Now, I'm concerned.
Now, doesn't that seem funny? I mean, what a name for a UFO event, right?
Right. Well, you know, now I want to say also before we get into this segment discussion that I am not, and I know Dale is not, a government basher, so I don't want to come off like I am. But, you know, the interesting thing is that over the years that I've been researching this, these names like Smith and Alan Dulles, one of our programs here not too long ago, we had Jim Hogan on. Jim's kind of a CIA specialist and real knowledgeable about that agency.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he said, well, he found that Alan Dulles was actually involved in the Robertson panel as well.
Well, you know, they're having trouble keeping the information in their agency right now.
The dike is about to bust, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I think so.
Well, the thing is that, you know, with all of these movers and shakers, like, for example, General Cabell, you know, who was involved in Project Blue Book and who eventually was taken from Blue Book and promoted to number two man in the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
What, you know, it appears, and again, I don't want to stretch the importance of this to make it more than it really is, but I can't help but think that, you know, the way that things go, like July 1947, something happens out there in the desert. If it was something that was foreign, and I mean really foreign.
But, you know, Michael, let me tell you, 40, you brought up a good year, 47.
That's a year a lot of stuff happened.
Yes, you had, in a two-month period, you had 852 reports. 520 of them were daytime reports in a two-month period.
Uh-huh.
Reported not by your next-door neighbor, but reported by, you know, military pilots, you know, commercial
mm-hmm.
pilots.
People who are qualified to
people
know.
People who are qualified to say, hey, it was round, it was flying, and it passed us. You had the IAC created in that year, although you have the CIA conflicting with that. They're saying the AIC, and for your listeners, the AIC is the Intelligence Advisory Committee, which CIA director was chair on that. The NSA later on sit in on that and when it got into after its creation.
Wasn't the IAC kind of like a forerunner of the NSA, maybe?
The IAC was, it was one of the black, you know, intelligence agencies, because everybody who was somebody was sitting in on it.
Uh-huh.
And many people will talk about, you know, we still don't know enough about it, but it was created in 1947. Interesting year that it was created. The CIA said it was created in the 50s to purposely create the Robinson Panel. We found out that was incorrect, that it was created in 1947. And you have you had the General Twining Report in 1947.
Now, that was the thing that preceded Project Grudge, wasn't it?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Well, the General Twining came out and basically said, yeah, these things are real, they're round, they're tailless, they outfly our best aircraft, and we better take them very seriously and look into this.
That memo, by the way, that has been authenticated then, right?
Oh, yeah, that is a real memo. It's a 3-page memo.
Okay.
You know, and then when you got into Smith, it was Smith that drafted the paper up to the NSC. However, it was a draft. We don't know if it really went up to the NSC, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes they'll draft something and things can be looked at before they get up to that far and then talked about later without the original draft. And he's talking about, Schmidt is talking about these things over military installations, and they take it to be a national security problem. And so that's very, very interesting, because I think at that particular time they realized that they had to look at this in a different way. And, with our allies, do we communicate with our allies at the same time? If we get into the British, which are not an ally then, and part of NATO, you know, MI6, MI5, do we let them in on it? And there's no way that I can see that we couldn't let them in, because it's not a United States phenomenon.
No, this
phenomenon.
Is a global,
it's a world phenomenon.
Right. Now, see, that's an interesting thing you bring up there, because also in that time frame, we were seeing the government setting up a lot of these world or global agencies.
Yes, that's right, they did.
And, you know, the thing is, I know that's, again, it's stretching it, but it looks to me like this is a very serious, or they perceive it to be a very serious problem. Now, you know, national security and national defense, as you brought up a minute ago, those terms should be challenged.
I really do believe that, being that that's what they keyed on, they say, they're not saying that they're not real.
No,
they're saying that there's no threat to national security.
We saw that language, too,
mm-hmm.
In the Condon report.
That's right.
That actually lobbed off the Project Blue Book and closed it.
Well, here's the interesting thing. Now, if you have the Robinson report, but you have the Durant report, and the agency, the CIA, will say, well, they're both the same report. And you say, no, they're not the same report.
Is the Robinson panel's report still classified, a large part of it?
No. They're releasing it. However, they're claiming that all of it is there, and there's no difference between the Robertson report and the Durant report. However, if you remember, some of the doctors said they wanted that lingo that they had mentioned, you know, stricken from the original report.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their recommendations, in other words, be stricken. And so we know that they're not the same report. The CIA, you know, after waiting 2 years, had turned us, you know, saying that they were going to give it to us, have turned us down and said that there's no difference. So we're arguing still with them on that. The interesting thing also is, after Dr. Robinson made his final prognosis, whatever you want to call it, that there's no threat to national security, he ends up a few days later at the NSA, to NSA headquarters, having a meeting to discuss the Durant report.
Oh, okay.
And they say in the document, Fred's report. So they wanted to see more of Fred's report than the Robertson report.
Now, Fred's report would probably, what, have a little more meat to it, or discuss more of the serious nature of this thing?
Yeah, I think so,
and this
without
would have,
a doubt.
And this, of course, would have been not for public consumption.
No.
Because apparently, I think it's fair to say that the Robertson panel was mostly a public relations thing like Project Blue Book has been alleged to be.
Yes, it was, and these guys were all briefed by the CIA and what they could talk about, you know, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
What they could bring up in there and what their purpose was. So, you know, it, to me it was a preset meeting, and, you know, there's a little booklet that the CIA had saying that none of these doctors had any CIA connection, any government connection. However, that was false on their part. I'm not saying they're lying, but I'm saying it was false. And that is because, you know, Dr. Robertson, prior, 2 years before he sit on that bench, he was CIA/OSI. And for your listeners, OSI is Office of Scientific Investigation.
Is that the
CIA?
Okay, okay, all right.
And then you had, you know, and the other doctors were not meatheads. Now, we did correspond with Thornton Page.
Okay. Dale, hold that, okay?
Sure.
We got to go to another break, and we're coming back for the final stretch of the Paranet UFO Continuum. So stay tuned. My guest is Dale Gowdy, and we'll be back after this message. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum.
Get the latest UFO news delivered right to your door with Continuum, the official quarterly publication of Paranet Information Services. Continuum offers a serious look at the world of ufology through hard news reports and interesting and provocative interviews with leading ufologists and investigators. There's a source and resource section to help you locate information on UFOs, plus much, much more. Each issue is also packed with information from the Paranet Information Services International Communications Network. So be informed with this comprehensive publication. Subscribe now and receive 5 issues for the price of 4. Send check or money order for $18 to Continuum, Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. That's Continuum, Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. Do it now.
Pilots, when you fly, you need convenient, accurate information for safe flight and landing operations, as well as local businesses that provide you with the services and treatment you deserve. The Skyway Publications Airport Directory and Entertainment Guides are what you need. These are free, pocket-sized guides giving you information about large and small airports all over the country. Information like radio frequencies, runway systems, coordinates, and taxiways, as well as fuel and aircraft services provided at the airport and local businesses catering to private pilots. It's yours free. Ask the fixed base operator at your favorite stops to carry the Skyway Airport Directory and Entertainment Guides or call area 303-669-1800. Skyway Publications, your ticket to safer, cheaper, and more convenient flight. Talk to the FBO at your favorite destinations or call Skyway Publications at area 303-669-1800. 669-1800.
Listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum. Whether or not you believe in UFOs, there's a lot about the subject you haven't heard. Stay tuned. Keep an open mind. Call in and join the discussion. Once again, here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And we're back. My guest is Dale Gowdy, and Dale has been researching UFOs for quite some time, and as you can tell from this last hour's conversation with him, he's got quite a knowledge of this stuff and the intelligence connection, which I find is probably very, very important. Dale, we've just got a couple more minutes left before we have to go, but what do we see today that is a tie-over from all of this policy making and all of this involvement by the intelligence agencies. What do we see today? What are we seeing manifested in the UFO phenomena or, you know, whatever? What do we see today there? How is it affecting us?
I think some people would take, for instance, it must have affected Senator Schiff in some direction, whatever, for whatever reason he tried to get the information out, and whether if he's going to be reelected and stay with it, hopefully
he will
stay
sure.
with it. Let's look at President Clinton. For instance, we have the PRD draft that was sent out to all the intelligence agencies, which was a draft from the White House to all the intelligence agencies. It was the PRD 29 draft, which told them to reclassify, go through all of their documents and reclassify those documents and make them available to get rid of some of the stuff. So hopefully there's going to, this next year in the Senate or the House, there's going to be talk about Executive Order 12356. And that order, basically for your listeners, means that any mention of something could cause great damage to national security, and basically, you know, that order can be on almost everything.
Yeah, and see, we're seeing a lot of this stuff, you know,
yeah.
a lot
and,
of fancy...
And that's going to be talked about on the, you know, basically the executive privileges comes from the National Security Act of 1947. This is why it's not a conspiracy, because of that executive privilege. If they feel something is a, if there's a national security threat, they don't basically have to tell the public that, and there's no mandate on how long can continue.
Yeah, all they have to do is say that's a national security problem.
That's right.
You know,
and
I can see
you
where,
know that everything is marked top secret.
Yeah, I can see where public confidence is a big, big issue here.
I would like to tell your listeners, first of all, you know, one of my colleagues is Jim Klautz, and he handles KUFON now and does a, you know, many, and he was... He did this article with me, and I find him very, very useful. So I'd just like to get his name in there. The last thing we talked about, of course, was Dr. Thornton Page. And Dr. Thornton Page did relate to us that he, you know, he was part of the Robertson panel, for your listeners. He basically gave a class at the university on the subject that he was talking about on UFOs for a while.
About 20 seconds, Dale.
But basically he did say that he believed that Robertson was connected with the NSA, and we found that to be very interesting.
Okay. I'm afraid that's going to have to be the last word. I want to thank you very much for being on the program
tonight.
Well,
thank you for having me on, Michael.
We'll have to get you back because, this is an hour just isn't enough time to cover it all. But thanks again, Dale.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Next week, our guest is going to be Greg Long. Greg is an investigator that has been looking into cases of sightings in the Yakima Indian Reservation in Washington State. It's a very interesting discussion. You don't want to miss it, so we'll see you next week. Until then, I'm Michael Corbin telling you to keep your eyes on the skies. Good night.